This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island. From the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you.
Good evening. This is Rock Cash, your host this week on The People Speak. The People Speak invites audience participation. You can listen in by phone calling 716-748-0144. Or if you have a smartphone or a computer, go to bbsradio.com, navigate to station 2, and click on the listen icon. You can also participate during the show with call-in questions for our guests, toll-free USA and Canada, 888-429-5471. Tonight's guest is a very special guest. Ellen Brown is the author of Austerity to Prosperity, The Public Bank Solution, and also The Web of Debt. Ellen is a candidate for the state treasurer of California. Ellen says we can get out of this web of debt, and she's here to tell us how. Ellen, welcome to the show. Good evening. I know you're running for state treasurer. Tell us how the fight's going.
The fight is it's a little one-sided. We have what's called a jungle primary now in California. So that means that only two candidates go to the finals in November. So in June, we have all the candidates run together of all the different parties. So you could theoretically have several Democrats and several Republicans and all the independents and other parties. I'm running as a Green because the Green Party takes no corporate money, which would allow me to stand up to the corporations if or when elected. But the problem is that 30% of we're a Democratic state, so of course the Democrats are expected to get the majority of the votes. And 30% of the population votes, or the voting population, or the people who vote, goes Republican just automatically. They go down the ticket and they just click Republican. So it's very likely that all of the third party and independent candidates will be knocked out in June, and we'll be left with our choice that, I can't remember who said it, but we don't actually need a third party. We need a second party. In other words, our top two parties are the same party, the big money party.
Right. They're all working together.
Yeah. So that's the fight. But it would be great to make a showing and to actually possibly knock out one of them.
It would take a bunch of us here on the ground to get out there and just wake people up and let them know, hey, this is who you need to vote for. But it's hard to take the people out of their norm.
Right.
Their train of thought is stuck on either one of the two parties or the one party in general.
Or I think they just don't know. And the two big parties are the only ones that have the money to put commercials on TV. And that's how they get to know their candidates. So most people don't listen to alternative. Well, and I mean, probably more than half listen to the TV, watch the TV, and that's where they get their news. They turn on the top of the news and get the first 10 minutes, and that's all they really pay much attention to. And then it's back to the whatever, the soaps or the, you know, the things that they need to unwind after their stressful day. And so they're looking for entertainment. So it's hard to reach a wide audience unless you have a lot of money so that you can advertise. And the other parties just don't.
Right. This web of debt, how do we get out of it? It seems like it's almost impossible. They've got control of everything. How do we get out?
Well, it is difficult. I was just listening to Catherine Austin Fitz. She's talking about the black budget. And I mean, at the federal level, the control is absolute. It seems like it's going to be pretty hard to break through, but there is still hope at the state level and the local level. So that's where I think we have to put our energies. We need to have communities that are self-sufficient. If or when things collapse, as many people are predicting, we need to have food, you know, access to food and water and basic things, energy. We need to set those things up. And the way to do that, you need funding. And so I think every community should have its own bank, and that's how they can take some capital, add the deposits for liquidity, and leverage that into credit. So what you can basically do is double your money if you have a bank, and a bank can borrow at near zero interest rate from rates from other banks. So you can get interest-free credit if you are a bank, or if you are a city, county, or a state that owns a bank. So that's my basic pitch, is that we need to get our money out of Wall Street and into our own homegrown banking system. We need to create our own credit. There's precedent for this. North Dakota did it in 1919. They were losing their farms to the Wall Street bankers, and they had a big populist uprising, and they took their money back, put it in their own Bank of North Dakota, and now they're doing brilliantly well. They're the only state that has totally escaped the credit crisis. They had a budget surplus every year since 2008. They have the lowest unemployment rate in the country, and they take their bank and partner with local banks to give credit to the local community. And they act as a rainy day fund for the state in case of emergency, so they don't have to sock a bunch of money away. That's what Governor Jerry Brown is talking about, or he's pushing for a constitutional amendment in California where any excess over the very austere budget that they've managed to balance the books with would go not to replace all those services that they cut back on after the collapse that was Wall Street's fault, but to sock away some money for the next collapse, which will also be Wall Street's fault. So Wall Street makes out like a bandit no matter what. We have to pay the piper before we're able to pay our own public servants.
Well, that shouldn't be the case. And it seems like they're investing in Wall Street all the time and thinking that that's the route to go instead of investing in the state itself.
Exactly. And we could do what Wall Street does for ourselves. The problem is that they're not even making loans. They take our money, they take our deposits, they take our investments. And what do they do with it? They buy foreign corporations. They work in the shadow banking system through the repo market. They use it for collateral for the repo market to borrow at almost nothing for their own accounts. And then they speculate for their own accounts. So right. They are not using that money to make loans to California at all. If we want to get our local economy going, we need to have a bank that has a mandate to serve the local economy.
All right. Well, see, I'm kind of a financial dummy in a sense, to the point to where I'm not in complete understanding of how inflation just continues to rise and rise and rise. And of course, the salaries continue to get lower and lower. This is due, of course, to the banking situation that we have here.
Well, yeah, you have some things that inflate, but wages, as you point out, are not going up. So those aren't inflating. And housing, it's sort of going up now, but it went way down. So there are some major parts of the economy that are not inflating. What is inflating is food, energy. Those are the things that big investors speculate with. So that's how they manage to drive up those prices, is that they're highly speculative. I've seen where banks have actually bought up big ships in order to store oil and other commodities on, so that they can hold them off the market and in order to manipulate the market. So we're stuck with that. And again, if we had our own bank, we could use it to fund things like alternative energy. I've heard of brilliant inventions that could keep your town in lights, in energy for in perpetuity for a small initial investment. But we don't. Nobody invests in those things. They're actively suppressed by big oil, which wants oil to be the only thing that'll run your cars and run your machines.
Right. There are all kinds of generators that you can pretty much connect to your house, and they operate on their own power source for a long, long time without costing you anything except the initial investment.
Right.
And they're keeping these out of the market.
Yeah. And then there are all these warnings about the economy collapsing. There are different reasons why it could collapse. And in Russia, where that did happen, they actually were much better situated for it. People had gardens. So if they had to grow their own food, they could and did. And they had a very good public transport system, so they could get to work without running their cars. And they had public housing. So we are not set up for a collapse. I mean, where I live, I mean, if there's a big catastrophe here, I'm probably going down with the ship, because there's nowhere to grow food where I live, and there's nowhere to have your own water well or whatever. So we need to set up communities that are not dependent on that great big global web that could well be, that's so fragile and could be going down.
Yeah, maybe houses being built with a very tiny backyard is precisely done for that, to where you can't grow anything. Luckily, I've got a decent-sized backyard to where I can grow my own fruits and vegetables, because the stuff that's in the market is just absolute garbage.
Yeah. Yep, they're poisoning us several different ways. It all could be rather discouraging, except for the fact that it is in times of crisis that things change. So whoever, the other side, mm-hmm. saying, never let a good crisis go to waste. But we, too, could use a good crisis for our own purposes. I think it would wake people up if, when they go to the bank, like happened in Cyprus or like happened in Spain, when you open up your computer to look and see what you've got in your bank account and it's got a hold on it, you can't get it, or you try to go into the bank and you can't get it, that will wake people up. And it'll be like North Dakota in 1919, when they're losing everything they've got, they will band together and figure out something new to do if it's not too late. So that's what I try to do, is propose solutions while we still have the chance to do it. Or at least to have that solution out there. And then when things collapse, people say, what about that public banking idea? We could try that.
Well, yeah. I mean, the government should have had the banks in their control for a long time. Why didn't that happen?
I don't think we've had the government in our control for a long time. It's never really been our government, not since the American colonies. And then it was the King of England, or it was actually the Bank of England, that took away our power to create our own money. And then we had to borrow from the British, basically from the Bank of England, which was not even lending. They were supposedly lending gold, but of course they were really lending their own banknotes, which were not. There were many more banknotes than there were gold. So they were printing the money, basically, and we were borrowing their money at interest, and we were beholden to them. And that was the same for all the colonies. And then when the colonies broke away, they maintained their hold by other means, by this central banking system that they've set up. So we've been sort of in this colonization mode for centuries without really recognizing it. So I'm hopeful, at least, that if we have a major crisis, that maybe people will wake up to the fact that we could have our own money. We could fix all this just with publicly managed credit, a public credit system. If we make money and credit a public utility, we could have it all. We've actually got the resources. I've read we've got the resources to feed everybody, but you've got to do it a little more efficiently than what we're doing now. So you need to put some resources into it in order to set up that alternative system.
Right. We do have resources, but they are also controlled by the same corporation that is controlling the banks and controlling pretty much everything else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because there's no such thing as small farmers out there. And if they are small farmers, they're very, very small. It seems like these corporations have grabbed a hold of all the big farming organizations and put them under their tap.
Yeah, my great-great-great-grandfather built the farm in Pennsylvania during the Civil War. And my grandmother sold the farm for $13,000 in 1963, I think, or 65. Sold it for almost nothing, 180 acres. I'd love to have that farm now. But that's the way it was. You know, they were actually squeezing out the small farmers. You couldn't make a living that way. Well, she didn't have any men to work it, and that was the problem. But
yeah, that would definitely be a problem. That would be a problem. So now, what is in control of our banks? I mean, if we didn't have these, privately owned banks and our government was printing its own money and loaning the money out, I don't think that we would need to pay taxes if they were charging us just interest on whatever they loaned us. It would seem that it would be perfect enough for them to sustain an economy for the state and pretty much all of its resources within.
Right. Well, that's what they did in Pennsylvania, in the colony of Pennsylvania, where all the colonies were issuing their own money, but some of the colonies overprinted because it was a lot easier to print the money than to bring it back in the form of taxes. So they didn't tend to hyperinflate or overinflate or devalue their currencies. But in Pennsylvania, they had another system that was more efficient. They lent the money into the economy. So they would print the money and lend it. Say you lent say you printed $105 and you could lend $100 and then spend the other $5 into the economy and lend it at 5%. And then the money would be out there to pay principal and interest. Unlike the system we have today where banks create all the money in the form of loans, but they don't create the interest to pay back the loans. So there's always more debt in the whole system.
Right.
Money to pay it with.
Plus, they're
using
less money to create the amount of debt that they're putting out.
Right, but in Pennsylvania, it was a sustainable system because the money was out there to pay principal and interest. So the interest was sufficient to run the economy. During the period they had that system, they paid no taxes, except an excise tax on liquor. They had no government debt, and there was something else good about it that I've just forgotten. Anyway, it was a sustainable system. And I did the numbers on what we have today. I mean, people would say, well, that wouldn't work today because government has gotten so much bigger. But it actually would. We could actually eliminate personal income taxes with such a system because we're paying $400 billion a year on interest. There's something like $700 billion in interest that the banks collect. So if we had been borrowing from ourselves all along, our debt would be interest-free, so we wouldn't have to pay that $400 billion. Plus the $700 billion comes to $1.1 trillion, and that was the year I figured that out. I think it was 2011 or something. That year, personal income taxes were also $1.1 trillion. So we actually could have not paid income taxes had we had that system.
Well, in the tax code, I thought that actually that income tax was actually illegal in accordance with the tax code, because you were supposed to pay taxes on profit, and when you're exchanging labor for money, you're not really making a profit, you're exchanging labor for money. And so employment tax code, from my understanding, is actually illegal. It wasn't ratified by 2/3 of the states. So there was a lot of things that were wrong with that to begin with. with also.
Yeah, that's true. It wasn't ratified. The problem is that it was like pretty close to 100 years ago. So it would be pretty hard to get reversed. But, yep, agreed. It was illegal to start with.
Wow. I've got a question for you from one of our listeners. We'll get that answered. Then we'll take a short break and we'll be right back with it. So Mike in California wants to know if a public bank system were to be successful, be established in many states, would it lead to a showdown with the federal government?
Okay. You want me to answer now or after the break?
No, now.
Okay. No, I think that we could, well, it probably would happen in the context of, I'm foreseeing a bail-in here. Some big bank is going to go down and they're going to take our deposits because that is now the law in Europe that they have to take the depositors' money before they can hit up the taxpayers' money in this new banking union that they have. And that's the template. We'll be doing the same thing. We've actually got that in Dodd-Frank. So you can just imagine if, let's say, Bank of America goes bankrupt and suddenly they take their depositors' money and turn it into equity, that will cause an uproar among the citizens. And they would certainly be justified in forming their own banks. And I don't see how Wall Street could oppose that because they're just doing what most other countries in the world have already done. They already have public banking systems. And that particularly in times of banking crises, they become very popular with the population. People are rushing, like in Russia. There, I saw that last month in Russia, a man took 3 hostages in order to try to get his money back, his own money back from his bank, which had gone bankrupt or it lost its license. So in Russia, they learned that in 1998 when they had that banking crisis, and they learned it again in 2008. And the people generally have just flooded into the big public banks, the state-owned banks, because they're the safest.
All right. With that being said, we'll be right back with Ellen Brown here on The People Speak and our awesome sound engineer, Don Newsom.
Got questions? The library's got answers, and books and magazines and CDs and videos and web access and databases and all sorts of other resources at your library. In a world that's information rich, libraries are information smart. Find the right answer and a whole lot more at your library.
With over 150 million registered users, Pal Talk is the largest video chat community in the world, with over 300 Pal Talk support staff speaking dozens of languages to help you enjoy your online experience. Meet new people across town or country or continent while chatting about your interests. Sing live karaoke, listen to music, join a lively political debate, or play group trivia in one of thousands of chat rooms in various categories from your PC, mobile, or tablet device. Joining Pal Talk is free and easy. Go to paltalk.com and become part of our friendly community today.
In America, most of us have the basics we need to survive, but there are millions of children all over the world who don't. Children who must work instead of going to school. Children who were forced to fight as child soldiers. Children who can't have an ordinary childhood because they lack health care, clean water, or good nutrition. For these children, there is UNICEF. UNICEF works in 157 countries and territories, providing children with what they need to survive and grow. To learn more, visit unicefusa.org or call 1-800-4-UNICEF.
Hello, this is Wesley Snipes. And when I'm divinely inspired and spiritually motivated, I listen to VBS
Radio.
In a world of abundance, hunger is a crime. When a malnourished child dies, we're all guilty. Yet it happens every 5 seconds. Let's do the right thing. Put hunger away for good. Please, give to the World Food Program.
This land is yours.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you.
Welcome back to The People Speak. This is Rock Cash with our guest, Ellen Brown. Ellen Brown, welcome back. Ellen, more questions for you. I've got a question from Ron in Germany, and he wants to know, who and how would we establish a public bank system with honest people? Where would we find the honest people? I mean, that's another thing.
Right. Well, I'm looking at the Bank of North Dakota. Those people actually are honest. And I read a recent study that said that, contrary to popular belief, public banks are more honest, less corrupt than private banks. And one reason is there's no way you can't make any money by, you're not allowed to make, you don't get bonuses, fees, commissions. You don't make any money by churning loans. You're just a civil servant and you get paid for making reasonable loans. And the better job you do, if you get promoted, it's because you've done a good job serving the public. So they've got total transparency, and they total accountability. They're audited, I think, three different ways routinely. So everybody can see what's going on. They see what kind of loans they're making. So there's just no motivation. It's just like there's no motivation to be corrupt in the working for the whatever, the Department of Motor Vehicles or something. I mean, you're just doing your job.
I've realized something, and I realized this back, you know, a while back. So in 2006, I don't know if you remember, years ago, you used to be able to put in a couple $100 in a bank account for a child. And by the time they were 21, with the interest and everything, they were supposed to have something like $2,000, or at the age of 21, they would have $10,000 or whatever, because of the interest and the accumulation just by having the money in a bank. So I did a little experiment. I did that in two bank accounts, and I'm like, okay, well, I'll blow a couple of hundred. I'll put it in the savings account, and I want to see how long it lasts. Within 3 months, it was depleted down to less than $15. With the fees and everything else, I was like, oh,
right.
My God.
Well, it's just that a public bank, yeah, well, that is a, I mean, exactly. The private banks are not honest.
Well, of course. So the deregulation of the banks done by Ronald Reagan was actually a harm than it was any good for the American citizenry.
Right. Agreed. That's where, well, they deregulated them supposedly. The argument was that they needed to be able to compete with the European banks, which supposedly weren't regulated. But I don't think that was actually true either. It was to allow them to get into this whole shadow banking system, derivatives, where they've made huge amounts of money now, and they're not going to let go of that very easily. You know, in the savings and loan crisis, the savings and loans had made these like 5% loans for 30 years, and then interest rates went up to 20%. And so they had, their borrowing costs were higher than what they were already committed to collecting on these loans, and so they went bankrupt. But so that's when the securitization thing became very popular, where they could sell off the loan to investors, and that way they didn't have to hold this thing for 30 years and take the risk that the interest rate would do something.
I would think that would be the IMF and the Federal Reserve themselves doing that intentionally to knock out the competitors so they can monopolize.
Yeah, well, the theory was that they did it in order to, there was stagflation then, and this was supposed to reduce inflation by making it harder to borrow. But of course, that's not what it really did. It increased inflation because, it drives up prices. Because if you're a producer and you have to pay 20% on your credit line instead of 5%, you're going to have to raise your prices to cover that cost. That's just the way it works. Indeed. So that didn't work. Their whole model didn't work. But I would agree, they also managed to capture all those third world countries that had been forced to borrow in order to pay for the oil that quadrupled in price in the 1970s, which was also manipulated. So they had to borrow all these dollars since the oil was sold only in dollars due to a Henry Kissinger secret deal. And then suddenly they borrowed on these variable interest rates, and then their interest rates went up to 20%. So they were totally locked in debt. There's no way they could, even though they're paying routinely, their debts were going up instead of going down.
Wow. More questions for you from our audience. James in Connecticut wants to know, critics of the state banks say it would disrupt the economy because of exceedingly high startup costs would be drawn from commercial banks. Does Zelen have a way to smoothly transition the state-owned banks?
The startup costs are not actually much. For if you're a state-owned bank, you can open it in an office in the treasury. You don't need to buy a building necessarily. It might be nice to have a building, but you could have an internet bank. You could be up and running in 3 months. The question is, where are you going to get the capital? But states, cities, counties all have these rainy day funds tucked all over the place. If you can find them in the comprehensive annual financial reports, it's a one of those big shocking scandal things that was been on the internet, that California apparently has $600 billion in these rainy day funds all over the state that it's not doing anything. That money's sitting there drawing extremely low interest. I'm running for California State Treasurer, so I happen to know about the Treasurer's investment pool. The Treasurer manages a pool with $54 billion in it, currently earning 0.24% interest, earning almost nothing. So, and who's getting the benefit of that? They don't spend this money. They can't spend it because it's earmarked for different funds, like there's the Highway Fund and the Education Fund. So this is money that the taxpayers have overpaid, like they've done a bond issue and they didn't use all the money. So then they don't give it back to the taxpayers. They just put it in these funds and call it rainy day money, but really they just don't want to hand it over to the state or to the taxpayers. So you could take some of that money and you can't spend it, but you can invest it. So you could invest it in stock in your own state-owned bank. It would get a much better return than what they're getting now. The Bank of North Dakota has a return on equity, or has had ever since 2008, when everybody else was going, like our pension funds were losing tons of money. They've had a return on equity of between 17% and 26%, a very nice return. I think that's double what the banks are getting now on average in reasonably good times. So you could then take that deposit or that capital base, and then you're allowed to lend 10 times your capital. So you do need liquidity or deposits, or you know, but you can get the your estate. You can get that liquidity. You can run your revenues through it, your payroll through it. You can run all those rainy day funds. Different things can be. It's like a certificate, you can buy certificates of deposit. So they're deposited there and they're earning a bit of interest. But then the state is able to lend that at a much higher interest and earn a very nice return in addition to the return they're getting on their rainy day funds in the first place.
Right. Now, would we be able to do that in our own local, say, municipalities in the cities or in the counties? Would that also work in that perspective?
It would. We're looking right now at, there's a group of us working toward an LA city bank. It turns out that the city of LA is five times the state of North Dakota, and the county of LA is something like 18 times the population of the state of North Dakota. So North Dakota itself is only the size of a modest-sized city, not even a big city. So any reasonable-sized city could do it. You need about $20 million to start a bank. It depends. I think that maybe it's $12 million in Pennsylvania. I think it's $20 million here in California. So it's not big money for a government.
No, that it's not. All right. More question. And Bill in Kentucky wants to know, Ellen, do we have a better chance of accomplishing the ending of the feds or getting an honest investigation into 9/11? Oh, wow.
Well, I don't know. We certainly need a change of governments to get an honest investigation of 9/11. I don't know what's going to bring that about. I mean, so many people, if you took a vote, people would definitely say, yes, let's have an honest investigation. But when was the last time they really listened to the people?
Well, it seems that nobody's listening to the people, and they're listening to these television stations that are telling them, you know, things that they really don't need to be hearing, the bunch of hoopla that really isn't going on, and, you know, they're distorting our message. This is why I'm here on this radio show, because it's direct, it's in your face, and it's truth and it's honesty about what's really going on here in this country.
Mm-hmm. It's so lucky we have stations like yours, because that's where people get the real news if they look. But then the trouble is, all those people, I used to be one of them when I was a busy lawyer and raising kids. And I mean, I had way too much on my plate to be investigating what's really going on in the world. I just turned on the news long enough to not sound like an idiot at dinner. And that was it.
Yeah, well, yeah, if you're not local up on the media onslaught, then you don't know what's going on in the world.
That's truly not the case. Yeah, if the big media don't recognize it, it's not true. Like 9/11, even though if you took a vote, I bet that most people would say it's not the scenario that we're being fed on by the mass media, but they get to determine what truth is.
Yes, in actuality, and I realize this just from people I run into on a daily basis, I do not get anybody that doesn't think that the government is behind 9/11. And that's the funniest thing. And that, yet the media will come out there and tell you these conspiracy theorists, but people will sit there and, you know, try to throw that conspiracy theorist in your face. But majority of the people where I live, and I'm also in the state of California as you, and they're just as adamant about the government, and they have no trust for the government anymore. They're all bearing arms and getting ready for the worst.
Yeah, and with the banks, they've been actually caught in one literal conspiracy. I mean, the legal definition of a conspiracy, one after another. For example, the LIBOR rigging, where 16 of the world's largest banks, like literally the largest banks in the world, got together, colluded to rig the rate at which interest rates are set. And the interest rates are determined over $400 trillion in interest rate swaps. I mean, a giant, giant market, something like seven times the gross domestic product of all the countries in the world combined. And they rigged that. Now, why? They should obviously go to jail. That's illegal. But nobody is big enough and powerful enough to put them in jail. In fact, Eric Holder, our attorney general, said that they were too big to jail. Apparently, because, I mean, the alleged reason is that our economy is in their hands. And if you take, it's like a big pyramid scheme. And if you take a few little pegs out of the bottom of the pyramid, the whole thing will collapse. But the other darker reason is that, Catherine Austin Fitz says this, that they're actually partners with the government. So the government has all this black ops stuff going on, trillions and trillions of dollars worth, and they need banks to launder it for them, and those big banks do it. So if you threw those bankers in jail, there would be nobody would be willing to replace them. They'd say, no, I'm not going to do that. You're going to throw me in jail. So they have to play ball.
That's true. That's true, because a lot of people don't realize how the government is actually in the illegal drug trade.
Yeah, you know, among other things.
Of course.
The chemtrails are around here. The chemtrails have gotten so obvious. I mean, you have to deny the evidence of your eyes to say that those aren't chemtrails. And yet they're not telling us what's happening. It's so Orwellian. We can see that there's something huge going on in our skies all the time. Mm-hmm. And they're denying it.
Yeah, well, believe it or not, a lot of people on the ground are also denied. Oh no, that's not it. And I used to watch this as a kid. I've never seen any of that as a kid. The only thing that I seen stayed in the sky was the writing when they used to smoke out the little text up in the sky for people. That was the only thing that I used to see stay in the sky for about 10 minutes, and then it would be all gone. But yesterday I was watching it, and it just turned into a full cloud cover.
And it hasn't rained in California. We've gotten almost no rain this whole year. And I've also read that that's due to chemtrails, that the aluminum drops. Well, I don't know. Somehow the aluminum is killing the trees because it gets into the roots and prevents them from taking up the water they can get. And then the water's not there either.
Right.
Our trees are dying right where I live.
I have the same problem. And I was mentioning that during the break to the sound engineer. I've got more questions for you. Cindy in California wants to know how we can support Ellen and learn how or more about the public banking solution.
Oh, thanks. Well, I have a website, which is ellenbrownfortreasurer.org. It's for the number four. And that has ways to volunteer and donate and so forth. And then my regular blog is ellenbrown.com, and it's got all my articles on it and lots of information. And then I'm the founder of the Public Banking Institute, which also has a great deal of information. publicbankinginstitute.org is the website.
Right. And I've got another question from Francis in Oregon, and he wants to know, Ellen, if you win by a miracle, what would be the first 3 steps towards implementing your plan on a public banking system?
Well, I've got my eye, my imaginary eye, on that Treasurer's investment pool, $54 billion that's doing virtually nothing. And even they admit that it's kind of a waste of money. It's just sitting there. And Jerry Brown is having a great deal of trouble funding his bullet train, for example. We could show him how this could be done with his own state-owned bank. We had a bill 2.5 years ago for a feasibility study for a state-owned bank that passed both houses of the legislature, and Jerry Brown didn't sign it, not because he didn't believe in public banks, but he said, we don't need another committee. We can do this with our own banking committee. But that was 2.5 years ago, and they've done nothing. So I want to get a fire under them to look at this again and just get in there and show them the wisdom of this arrangement. I mean, this is California. We're, as goes California, so goes the nation. I mean, we've always been known as the original thinkers, and we need to do some out of the box thinking and get out of this debt slavery to Wall Street. Huge amounts of our state revenues are going to Wall Street.
Well, of course, they should also take that money and help fund businesses that are going to help the state grow in so many different ways. A lot of small businesses that can always use the loans to start up and things of that nature. It seems like they try to push those people off to the banks, whether it's the Small Business Administration, which is the government thing. I think the state invests in its own people, it can do nothing but succeed.
Yeah, that's. But they think they don't have the money. They think they've got this budget crisis. The way they got out of it was slashing services, laying off public employees, raising the sales tax, which of course hurts the poor more than anyone else. We now have a poverty rate that's the highest in the country, which is shameful. And you see these homeless people on the streets, which is also shameful. But the argument is that we had to balance the budget in order to pay our debts, which means our debts to Wall Street, who got us into this in the first place. And now they want this rainy day fund to, because the sales tax, the rise in the sales tax is temporary. So I think it only goes for 7 years and then we're going to be back where we were. So they are saying we have to sock away money to prepare for that. But we could be our own rainy day fund if we had our own bank, just as the Bank of North Dakota is.
Well, my theory on that, Ellen, and if the banks are screwing us, we can screw them right back and just
shut
them
down. Well, that's like the Icelanders did, and they definitely came out ahead for it.
Yes, just shut them down. Just shut them down. And that's the only way that they can we can actually get retribution for it, is to not deal with them whatsoever. And that would be the best way. Just shut them down. Stop paying taxes to the IRS, which is pretty much run by the feds. And we're done. That would be the only way to do it. We pay state and local taxes, and an allotment of the state and local taxes would go to the federal government. This way they can't get carried away.
Right. Well, to not pay your taxes, you can wind up in jail, but you can definitely pull your money out of the Wall Street banks. Nobody can stop you. We can just move them into our local credit unions for the time being, but better yet would be to... Well, the whole point of a state bank is not your personal deposits, it's the state's deposits. States have a huge amount of money that is literally sent off to Wall Street. We should bring that money back into our state, put it in our own bank, and leverage it for our own purposes. Another reason we should do that is that there is this real threat of a bail-in. One of those banks is going to go down, and they're holding our state revenues. The theory is that the state revenues are protected because they supposedly they're secured creditors. But the security, the collateral, is this type of thing that they use in the repo markets. So they rehypothecate it. They keep lending it. They're using it for loans built on loans. And whoever's got the goods when the thing collapses, it's like musical chairs. The nature of a repo is it's a sale and repurchase. So if you bought it overnight and the system collapses, you get to keep it. So that the law in the 2005 Bankruptcy Act is that the derivatives claims go first in bankruptcy. So a big bankruptcy of, let's say, JP Morgan or Bank of America, which both have over $70 trillion in derivatives and over $1 trillion in deposits, and the FDIC fund only has $47 billion in it. If there was a big derivatives bust by one of those banks and the derivatives claims went first, they could wipe out the FDIC fund and they could wipe out the depositors.
Right. So pretty much everything is we're screwed. So that's what I'm saying. We can screw them before they screw us. Pull the money out. One last question before we go, Ellen, from Bill in D.C., and he wants to know if you have ever been contacted by any agencies, the government or otherwise, or harassed.
No, I've never been harassed.
Okay, lucky you.
Yeah, I think I'm sort of, they probably think I'm non-threatening, so I'm a girl, after all.
Yeah, well, that's good. That's good. We don't want anything to happen to anybody, and we definitely don't want them harassing people because that seems to be the norm.
I certainly heard of a lot of people being harassed, but I think they were in more powerful positions. They don't really seem to go after writers. I know before I got into this field, I wrote 10 books on health and the politics of health, alternative health care. And it was the doctors who would get in trouble because they were licensed. So the licensed doctors who would try to do alternative cancer treatments could wind up in jail. But they never go after the writers. You can write about this stuff and you're home free. We still have a modicum of freedom of speech in this country.
Yes, we know we're being scammed pretty hard by the American Medical Association also. So, you know, the medications and everything else, it seems like they're attacking us from all ends and all aspects and everything. So I guess the best thing to do is try to sustain ourselves pretty much on our own accord, because nobody is going to be there for us. So I guess the suggestion would be for communities to start uniting. And once we unite, they can't beat us. It's the unity that they have taken away from us. And that it's the unity that people had in the past, where the communities all came together and helped one another and they got through. We don't have that ideology or train of thought these days, because due to the conditioning through the media of selfishness, and I want to call that selfishness, to where people don't care about their neighbors, they only care about themselves.
Yeah, and I think that they've built in this suspicion of other people and this pitting of one group against another. So that is, I agree, that we have to get together as a united front. In fact, people say to me, well, what's a safe place to put your money? Well, there really aren't any safe places. In the bank is certainly not the safe place it used to be. It depends on how good your mattress is, I guess. But I heard of somebody that had their money in a mattress. It was an older woman, and she had stored, I don't remember, it was over $1 million in a mattress. And her daughter thought it was an old mattress, and she surprised her with a new one. That thing wound up somewhere in a junkyard.
Oh,
but
wow.
Anyway, there are no real safe investments. Our only safety is going to be in changing the system. And to do that, we first have to have education. We have to understand what's wrong with our current system and how we could fix it. And then we have to unite in, you know, we have to join each other. Instead of shooting at each other, we need to form a united front against them.
And we also need to revamp the education system, because it seems like we're not being educated enough. We're not getting the proper education. We're not, we're being systemized. And we're being systemized for these corporations, indoctrinated for these corporations. Without these doctrines, you can't get into a company no matter how smart you are. So there's definitely something wrong with the entire system. But what can we do? We just have to take it upon ourselves. Ellen, I want to thank you for a wonderful show this evening. A lot of insight on the banking system and how it works. Hopefully, we'll have you again maybe after the election or the primary that's coming up in, I believe,
June 3rd. And if you live in California, don't forget
June 3rd. So maybe we'll have you back after that and see what happens. But in the meantime, me and my listeners and our audience, we will be going out and pushing for you, for those of us that live in California. Anyway, this is Rock Cash wishing you the best until next week. Don't forget to join us next week with our guest, Carrie Wedler. She's the girl whose YouTube video showed her torching Obama's T-shirt for his failure to fulfill his promise of change. See you guys next week. Thanks again to Don Newsom, our awesome engineer. And once again, thanks, Ellen Brown, and we'll see you soon.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the steeple by the relief office, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California. yeah, to the New York Island, the redwood forest, to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.